When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live on tape from the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York City, it's Stephen Colbert!
What do you want to live forever? Let's do a couple of shows. Come on, ride over there, have a seat. You gotta try it, baby. You gotta drive it. There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow. Bang! Shakalaka.
Yes.
Shakalaka. Hey, everybody. Love it. Beautiful. Beautiful. Please, ladies and gentlemen, won't you have a seat? Won't you please? My friends, my neighbors, welcome. Welcome one and all to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Everyone, if you've been watching the news, everyone is talking about yesterday's historic arguments by our nation's highest judges. There were recriminations, references to stench. CNN was all over the story this morning with their top headline, "The Masked Singer Reveals Who's Behind the Skunk." Thank you, CNN, for your tireless reporting on a woman's right to choose to dress up like a giant rodent and sing, "I'll Be Missing You." By the way, it was Faith Evans. She will be missed. We also heard from a slightly less trusted body, the Supreme Court. The justices heard oral arguments over a Mississippi abortion ban, and according to court watchers, the Supreme Court seems poised to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, come on, hold on, everybody. Everybody knows that famously, you can't read too much into oral arguments. So we don't know ultimately what's gonna happen, other than we definitely know. Cause based on what we heard from the justices, it is looking rough for Roe, or as one legal expert put it,
Roe.
Now, John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts, who has been seen as a potential swing vote in this case and is desperate not to make the Supreme Court a purely partisan institution, is trying to find a way to justify Mississippi's 15-week ban without overturning precedent, which is 24 weeks.
And why would 15 weeks be an inappropriate line? So viability, it seems to me, doesn't have anything to do with choice. But if it really is an issue about choice, why is 15 weeks not enough time?
So it was 24, now maybe 15. Is Roberts Chief Justice or Chief Auctioneer? I hear 24 weeks, 24, 24, 24, 15, 15, 15, can I get six? A six, I hear six from Texas. Going once, going twice, sold to the glint in your boyfriend's eye. So Roberts seemed a little muddled about the timeline there. Clarence Thomas seemed confused about what they were talking about at all.
I understand we're talking about abortion here. But what is confusing is that if we were talking about the Second Amendment, I know exactly what we're talking about. If we're talking about the Fourth Amendment, I know what we're talking about because it's written, it's there. What specifically is the right here that we're talking about?
He knows it's his job to interpret the Constitution, right? I'd like to see Clarence Thomas in a lit class. If we're talking about Animal Farm, I understand we're talking about a bunch of animals on a farm. And that's all it can be about. There's no mention of the Russian Revolution. Now on to my favorite book about fire safety, Fahrenheit 451. One argument supporting Roe is that a woman's right to choose is directly linked to her access to economic opportunity. Justice Amy Coney Barrett believes that doesn't matter anymore, thanks to what are called safe haven laws in all 50 states that allow mothers to renounce all parental responsibilities at birth.
Both Roe and Casey emphasize the burdens of parenting. And insofar as you and many of your amici focus on the ways in which the forced parenting, forced motherhood, would hinder women's access to the workplace and to equal opportunities. It's also focused on the consequences of parenting and the obligations of motherhood that flow from pregnancy. Why don't the safe haven laws take care of that problem?
Amy Coney Barrett doesn't think a woman has to be a mother. She just thinks she has to give birth. It's all in her new pregnancy guide, What to Expect When You're Forced to Be Expecting. Barrett did concede. She did concede that mandatory pregnancy might be inconvenient, but she doesn't see that as a problem.
There is, without question, an infringement on bodily autonomy, you know, which we have in other contexts like vaccines.
Now, I'm no doctor, but that seems like a false analogy. Vaccines are mandated because COVID is contagious. No one ever says, can you put a mask on your belly? I don't want to catch baby. Of course, the three liberal justices were not buying any of this, especially Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who pointed out that none of the basic issues have changed since the court's previous upholding of Roe, and that Mississippi's stated purpose for bringing this case now is because they wanted it in front of all these new Republican appointees. And given those facts, she asked this question.
Will this institution survive the stench?
It's a valid question, though that stench might just be Brett Kavanaugh's beer sweats. Or, shall we say, boof burps. Now, if the justices do overturn Roe, it will not be popular. Last month, an ABC News, Washington Post, Papa John's Triple Bacon Pizza poll found that 60% support upholding Roe, compared to only 27% who want to overturn it. That's more than 2-1. So, if it is this unpopular, why is everyone saying it's going to happen? Well, and I don't want to get too technical, but we, what's the word, don't live in a democracy. 5 of the 9 justices were appointed by presidents who lost the popular vote. The last 3 confirmed by a Republican Senate who now represent 41 million fewer Americans than the Democrats. In fact, Republican senators haven't represented a majority of the U.S. population since 1996. A lot has changed since 1996. Back then, the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor went to Kevin Spacey. And the best director was Mel Gibson. And the Republicans have their nominees. Gibson Spacey, 2024, still better than Ted Cruz. There you go. There you go. But, oh, in pandemic news, we're still talking about Omicron. Though there's controversy about how you're supposed to say Omicron. Is it Omi or Oma? How do you say it?
Oh, my.
Thank you, Ensign. Yesterday, we learned the first Omicron case on U.S. soil was found in California, which led the state's Secretary of Health and Human Services to claim Californians were proud to have identified the first Omicron case. Good for you, Golden State. You put that kind of positive spin on all your disasters. Greetings from California, home of extra crispy trees. Unfortunately, that's not the only case. Today, a second case of the Omicron variant was identified in Minnesota. But do not panic. It's just one person in America's heartland who recently traveled to New York City. Okay, fine, but maybe he was here on business, spent most of his time alone in his hotel, getting takeout, and staring pensively out the window at all the people he wasn't infecting right after he attended the 2021 anime convention at the Javits Center. No! Let's go to a reaction from the anime community.
Damn you! Why?
So, Omicron is here. It is here in the United States, but don't worry. President Biden has a plan he announced today. One thing is requiring travelers to wear masks on airplanes, public transportation, and trains. Oh, good. Trains. It's reassuring to know that the guy masturbating on the Q train is thinking about someone else. But the anti-vax community has their own plan to combat Omicron. Make up crazy crap. The newest batch of Online Stupid maintains that Omicron is a hoax, saying lefties will be fooled again. The rest of us need to stay strong. Their proof? If you scramble the letters of Omicron, you get the word moronic. Wow.
That's what they did.
That theory is incredibly Omicron. Okay, it is true. If you rearrange the letters in Omicron, you can spell moronic, but that doesn't prove anything. If you rearrange the letters in coronavirus, you can spell corn savior. That doesn't mean I'm going to bow down and worship Orville Redenbacher. There's just as much crazy over in the UK, where the anti-vax cuckoos think the new variant is an evil plot to stop Christmas, because over there, conspiracy theorists have found the anagram No Crimbo in the Omicron variant name, and Crimbo is a British slang for Christmas. First of all, Britain, if that is your name, what kind of slang is Crimbo? It sounds like the celebrity couple name of Christ and a bimbo. It's wrong. Now, you may have noticed, smart, alert listeners may have noticed you cannot spell Crimbo without a B. There's no B in Omicron. So to get No Crimbo, British conspiracy folks use the full name of the variant, Omicron B11529. Even if you believe this stuff, you gotta see that's a stretch. Okay, we've got not letters to spell Crimbo, but where do the numbers go? Blimey, they were stolen by Hillary Clinton. She's ruined Crimbo! We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, a new non-exercise exercise bike.
Hey, everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate, though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week, I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Every night, man. Yay! Yay! A constant in the crazy world. This band right here. In a world of chaos and disaster, this band is one bright, constant spot of beauty. Thank you, John. Thank you to everybody in the band. Incredible. Every night. Never flawless. Every night.
Love to do it.
John, you know who else is extraordinary? I'm so happy to have back here is Mahershala Ali, two-time Oscar winner.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about his new swan song. And the New York Times bestselling author Jason Reynolds is going to be out here.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. That's going to be great.
Very big night here. Folks, it's the holiday season, and I love all the annual traditions, like the one where you spend a month and a half eating nonstop and then get drunk on New Year's Eve and swear you're going to start working out. And somehow it never happens. It's a Christmas miracle. Every year, people buy things like exercise equipment and gym memberships that they never get around to using. But I recently saw a commercial for a company that wants to change all that. Jim?
We've all been there. You want to lose that extra weight, so you buy an expensive exercise bike. But after using it only once or twice, you realize that working out is hard. So you end up just hanging your clothes on it. That's why we created Hang-A-Thon, the only clothes hanger ergonomically designed to look exactly like a costly exercise bike. The Hang-A-Thon can handle up to two loads of laundry at a time. And unlike a traditional stationary bike, Hang-A-Thon has zero workout capability, so you couldn't ride it even if you wanted to. The Hang-A-Thon's adjustable seat can accommodate everything, from boxer shorts to full-body long johns. Need to hang dry your sweaters? Use Hang-A-Thon's patented Leave It Near an Open Window technology. Why spend $2,000 on exercise equipment you never use when you can spend $1,000 on a clothing rack you sometimes use?
Wait, $1,000? That's still a lot of money.
It's half as much as the bike, so shut up.
Okay.
And for just $40 a month, you can hang with a total pro.
Let's get those clothes up off the floor. Woo! I love Hang-A-Thon. Yes!
Not riding a bike is cool. But what if I'd rather not run on a treadmill?
Then try the Hang-A-Thon Hang-A-Tread, a non-exercise treadmill you can dump all your clothes on. And because you're not going to put anything away, the Hang-A-Tread will clean up for you. So So stop wasting money, time, and energy and start wasting just one of those things with Hang-A-Time. You can give up.
After the break, Mahershala Ali. Late Show Pod Show listeners can get 20% off on all Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise on ParamountShop.com. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show shirts, mugs, accessories, and more with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
My first guest tonight is a two-time Academy Award winner you know from Moonlight and Green Book. He now stars in the film Swan Song. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Mahershala Ali. There you go. Nice to see you again.
Great to be here.
Now, since the last time I saw you, you have won 2 Oscars. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And this is something that I did not know the last time you were here, is that before you were an actor, you were quite an athlete. You were a D1 college basketball player.
Yeah.
And this was, it's even more interesting to me in a certain way, you were, as a child, a BMX racer at age 4.
Yeah.
That's you right there. Your mom let you do this? Because it's going to be rough and tumble. Your mom let you do this?
She did. She did. I raced for 6 years from when I was 4 to 10.
Wow.
And
any crazy races?
Crazy races, yeah. Definitely a few crazy races. one in particular, I remember racing against a good friend of mine. So I raced every weekend along with some older cousins, you know, and we were all in different, we were different age groups, different heats and whatnot. And a good friend, a girl by the name of Robin, you know, the girls would race with the girls, the boys raced with the boys. But a good friend at the time, we didn't have enough kids for our heat, and Robin came and raced with the boys. And I remember looking at Robin like, okay, yeah, good luck, don't take this personal. And we started racing, and about quarter through the race, I kind of felt my lungs tighten up a little bit. And next thing you know, I was having a full-blown asthma attack mid-race, you know? And so I'm like wobbling. And then I see Robin passing me butt up a little bit. And then she passes me, finishes the race, and beats me. And then my cousins run onto the course and are like, you got beat by a girl, you got beat by a girl, you know, mid-asthma attack, which I obviously survived, but. But yeah, so, but some great experience.
So you were beaten by a girl because of asthma attack.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly.
Sure, sure.
Exactly.
That's why I didn't play D1 basketball, because of my asthma.
Right,
that's right.
Right.
Same here. Now, okay, you've had a big month, because Marvel fans will know that, and I'm not giving anything away, because this has been written up everywhere, is that in one of the post-credit scenes at the end of Eternals, we get to hear your voice, as it is revealed with your voice off screen, that you are going to be Blade in the MCU.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, how you must be like, you must sort of like prep yourself to know you're going into the superhero universe. How has that entry into superherodom gone so far?
Wow.
Is it weird?
It is weird because the anticipation is so great. Like, there's my excitement for any role is pretty equal, honestly, because I feel the responsibility is always the same. But I've never walked into a role where the anticipation of it was so great, where people were already so familiar with the character and have real opinions and points of view and all that. And so it feels different. There's clearly an added layer of pressure, which I will embrace.
Now, we don't see you in this at all. We only hear you.
Yes.
So it's basically a radio play so far. Yes. How do you make that decision about what you're going to sound like if you haven't done one day on camera?
You just lose a lot of sleep over it. Like, I was losing sleep over this line because ideally, you know, you want to, you know, be talking once you are filming. You know, and 100% of the times, 100% of the time, my first day on any set, on any job, I hate it. Like, I hate how I sound. I hate, like, you know, I don't believe myself, you know? And so you're trying to, like, get comfortable in the character. So to have to talk before you even, like, actually filming was challenging. But I'm grateful for it because it made it feel real, you know? It made it's like, okay, now we're going.
Now are you going to have to get all swole?
I got to get swole and jacked.
Yeah? You got a regimen in place?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like 50 pounds of chicken a day?
I'm doing your workout.
That is coffee and Ricola. Ah. That's what I live on these days. Now, you're also starring in this new film, Swan Song.
Yes.
Which is, it's a fascinating science fiction movie which raises really interesting ethical questions about identity and death. Yeah. And, well, tell the folks who you play and what your situation is.
I play a gentleman by the name of Cameron who is presented with the opportunity to clone himself because he has an illness and, you know, he's gonna die. But he can't tell his family. So
why can't he tell his family?
The opportunity, it's a secret at this point.
Okay.
The tech, all of that is very new.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is part of the issue, is that he can't share that information with his wife.
And is that part of the idea to save them the pain of his death, or?
I just think it's so early on in terms of the technology itself that it's such a secret, and this is sort of in the early sort of like testing phases of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so right now, you know, you're not allowed to tell anyone. And so that's part of the difficulty of the decision, because he can't incorporate his wife in that. So he's wrestling with this information and his decision, but it's this huge secret. And it's something that definitely keeps him up at night.
We have a clip here.
Yes.
And can you set up what's happening here?
I believe this is the first time that he is seeing his clone. And up until that point, it's been sort of this idea and something that he's been sold on. But at this point now, he's actually seeing his clone in the flesh.
Jim.
Molecularly regenerated, mapped to your DNA, Cameron Turner to the molecule.
Thank you.
We have to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere, everybody. We'll be right back with more Mahershala Ali.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Korra on The Legend of Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Zuko on The Last Airbender and General Iroh on The Legend of Korra. Each week, we'll recap and discuss another episode of The Last Airbender.
I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but
amazing guests stop by, from creators to cast to super fans, to chat all things Avatarverse.
Are we saying that this is possible in the Avatar universe?
Varney, we gotta spread the word. Now fans can also check out our weekly video pods too by subscribing to the official Avatar YouTube channel.
That's a lot of fire, isn't it?
That's right, we're on video this season, everybody! So, whether you're a super fan with encyclopedic knowledge or you're brand new to this incredible world,
it's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go! Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
So there's two of you.
There's two of me.
Okay, so if you get nominated, can both of you win? Is that two Oscars right
they
there?
They better learn to share.
It deals with, I mean, obviously cloning, and that raises the idea of identity.
Yeah.
Who is the you?
Yeah.
You know, I assume this is you, not your clone I'm talking to right now. That's a deep question to deal with.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Yes.
And do you know who you are? And if so, when did you know?
Well, you know, I'm a work in progress. I'm very much a work in progress. it's something that I've asked myself for a long time. I remember I was like 9, 10 years old, and I swear I used to go into the bathroom in our little apartment, and I would close the door and I'd turn out the lights, and you know, your eyes begin to adjust and you can see yourself in the mirror a bit, like, and I would just stare at myself in the mirror and I would ask myself who I was. And so, if you know, first you like, try it at home, I encourage you. You get past your name and what you look like and who your family is and all these things that you sort of identify with, and then you kind of start running out of questions or answers. And I remember as a kid just standing there feeling a little empty and a little scared, you know, once I got down to past all those other questions. So it's just something I think for me, like I've been asking that for a long time.
Now, I'll hit you with a deep one. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. If you had the same opportunity as your character to clone yourself and I assume pass on your personality.
Yeah.
And yourself, whatever that might be, your true self to this next person, and save your family the pain of the loss of you if you're in the same situation, would you do it?
You're assuming they'll be in pain.
The effect, how about that? The effect, whatever it is. Phew!
No, you know, I thought about that a lot, and all throughout shooting it, and even now, and seeing how the film came out, and I think I would lean towards the natural order of things, and in part because, and even in the film, I think what I walk away with from the film is that in reality we all have a better self, we all have a potential, we all have an inspired self, right? And so therefore we all have the potential to be our best self. So I want to be as present and as fulfilled as possible in the time that I have on this earth, and make the best I can of every day and every moment. And when my number is called, I just hope and pray I make the best use of my time as possible, you know?
Well, you... One of your performances that I greatly enjoyed was Green Book. Thank you. I want to ask you about a fella I know a little bit and admire a great deal, and that's Viggo Mortensen.
Yes.
And what is he like to work with? Because we've done a few bits together, but he's a real artist.
Oh, he's a genius.
He's an artist all the time.
He's a genius, 100% of the time.
What's he like on set? What's he like just to hang with?
Viggo is a blast to hang with. He's very funny, but very serious at the same time, meaning... You can't really work with a more committed person. One time, Viggo and I'll get to work, and Viggo's got a crow in the trailer.
Is that what this is? Is that what this is?
That's exactly what that is.
His pet?
That is not his pet. Viggo's got a crow in the trailer, and I'm like, yo, what's going on with this crow? And Viggo he decided to walk to work that day, which I'm sure security was excited about. But Viggo walks to work and a crow had fell out of a tree or got hit by something. He picks up the crow and he brings it into the trailer. And he's like petting the crow and taking care of it. He named the crow. And I'm in there and I look at his hair and makeup people and they're like, it's okay. And then Viggo's petting the crow and he leaves, he walks out. And he goes, he does this all the time. He always finds crows and he just takes care of crows. But I have to add, before he walked out, I looked on his shoulder and I saw he had a crow tattoo on his shoulder. So Viggo's a bit of a crow whisperer.
I think that means he's a wizard.
If I'm not mistaken, yes. That crow passed away, unfortunately, like within a couple of days. He got it to some sort of facility or something like that, but it was injured. It passed away. I think that crow got a little dedication at the end of the film. If I'm not mistaken, I think the crow's name is at the end of the film.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
I got to hang out with that guy.
Yeah. So.
Well, Mahershala, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate seeing you.
Coming up, Jason Reynolds. Enjoying this episode of The Late Show Pod Show? Then head to cohst.app/lateshow or visit the link in the description to fill out our quick 2-minute survey all about getting to know you.
Is a New York Times best-selling author and the national ambassador of young people's literature. Please welcome Jason Reynolds. Hey, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, New York Times best-selling author, you've written 17 books total, but I want to get to that title, National Ambassador of Young People's Literature. How does do you get a letter from Hogwarts? What happens? How do you get to do that?
No, you get a letter from the Librarian of Congress.
That's pretty close, man.
Absolutely.
That's kind of like a wizard.
It's just like a wizard.
That's incredible.
Absolutely.
What are the responsibilities?
I mean, you know, it's like any other ambassador. The typical responsibilities, or like a laureate. It's like the poet laureate system.
Oh, sure.
And so my responsibilities is to be like a walking cheerleader about reading and writing for young people.
That's lovely.
Absolutely.
Now, you write books. You write books for young audiences, and since we're on a late night show, there may not be as many of your core demo watching the show right now. What do adults need to understand about children's literature? Mm. And as kind of a follow-up here, is that do you write children's books? I interviewed Maurice Sendak many years ago, and he says, I don't write children's books, I write books. And somebody said, this should be for children. Mm. So how do you, like, what do we need to know about children's literature today?
This is first of all, thank you for asking this. Children's literature is the cornerstone of all literature. It's the building blocks of all literacy. Without the people like myself who write this literature, they can't be the capital L literature writers, right? They can't be a Toni Morrison or all of our famous writers today, Jesmyn Ward, Kiese Layman, these greats that we love, unless there's somebody earlier to create them and their readership. Mm-hmm. And so that's my job. Now, in terms of the great Maurice Sendak's comment, I actually disagree. I think that there are a lot of people who feel that way, and that's okay. I'm okay with it. Me personally, I think that this is a task of intention. This isn't something that I did and then they placed me here. This is something that I continuously, intentionally do every single day, because who deserves our intention more than children? Hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You speak to children a lot, do questions and answers, stuff like that. Do you have favorite questions you've gotten from kids? Because kids, they'll ask you questions that you thought you were smart until you heard these questions from kids.
That's a fact.
Do you have favorite questions you hear?
Oh, I mean, one of the ones that I get most often is, hey, Mr. Jason, what kind of car you drive? Right? Which is cool, because what it says is, one, they trust me enough to ask anything they want.
Sure.
And two, if I answer it, then we've created a human moment between the two of us, which is far more important than anything I'll ever say about a book. Right? So, like, that's a good thing, but that's probably the most common.
Jason, what kind of car do you drive?
a cherry red Porsche 911.
Now, that's a cool answer. Eh? Did you have to go get a cool car once you knew you were going to be asked that question? Or did that car precede the question?
You know what? For years, I was riding my bicycle and walking.
Yeah.
But I ended up, pandemic happened, and I said, you know what? Children's writers, we should show them. We should let them know.
I mean, part of your job as a writer, I suppose, is also as a teacher in a way. But I understand that you feel like part of your job is really, and part of your best experience is to learn from the children. What is it you learn from your interaction with your own audience?
You know, I think young people can really show us what compassion looks like. They can show us what empathy looks like. Think about it, man. Our biggest insult, our biggest critique, besides like, oh, all they do is TikTok, right? Our biggest critique is they're just so sensitive. We hear this all the time. We hear from comedians. We hear from everybody, right? They're just snowflakes. They're cupcakes. They're sensitive. When you really think about it, what we're doing is insulting them for being empathetic. We're insulting them for being compassionate, because they want to see the many slivers of each individual free. Imagine that. So I think we have much to learn from them if we could just give ourselves a moment of humility to listen a little more.
That's beautiful. You call your books, among other things, love letters to black kids. Mm. What is the love that you want to express?
Acknowledgement of their existence. I don't want to teach anything. I'm not interested in it. I'm not a teacher. I'm not a parent. I want to bear witness to their lives. I think if we can put eye, you know, it's a famous Hitchcock quote. He said, a face is not a face until I put light on it, mm-hmm. right? And so what that says in my world, when you transmute that, is that these young people don't exist in the world if we don't acknowledge their existence, if we don't write them into the stories. And so that's my only real goal, is to show two black kids, but for all kids, that, like, you're here, and people know you're here. And we'll continue to love you in your existence day to day, right? And I think that's important.
Your new book is called Stunt Boy. In the meantime, what's it about?
Stunt Boy is about a young man named Portico Reeves who has anxiety. And he lives in an apartment building with his best friend and his parents and his grandma. And his parents are going through a divorce. And so that anxiety is now metastasizing in an interesting way. It's flaring in an interesting way. And so he takes on an alter ego of a stunt man that he calls Stunt Boy because he wants to save his parents from themselves. Right? He wants to do the hard stuff so that the real heroes don't have to harm themselves. And it's just a cool story that kids can read and parents can use as a way to discuss the changing sands of family that so often happen.
Did you have anxiety as a child?
Oh, I've had anxiety my whole life.
How do you deal with it?
A few ways. One, there's medication. Mm. And there's therapy.
Sure.
And honestly, there's talking about it, normalizing it, making sure that people understand that there's nothing wrong with us, right? And that honestly, anxiety in and of itself is perhaps just an elevated part of our sympathetic nervous system, which means that maybe it's not about it being a weakness, but instead being a strength that is connected to our compassion. That I'm so compassionate that the mere thought of something wrong makes me anxious. That I'm so empathetic that the mere thought of someone in pain makes me anxious. This is a good thing.
And also that there might be things to be anxious about in our world right now.
Absolutely.
That might be one of the reasons why it's rising. And that leads to my last question, is that you have a, not an enviable distinction, which is that you have two books on the American Library Association's most banned books list for 2020. Mm. And what is happening to certainly American culture right now, and certainly the politicization of American culture, is very worrisome. It gives me a lot of anxiety. And I'm curious, what do you want people to know about the censorship of books in America right now?
That first and foremost, it's not a badge of honor. For those of us who are going through it, for those of us on that list, it's not a badge of honor. People always say, congratulations, you're doing something right. It's like, yeah, but at the same time, there's been access cut for all the young people who might need these books and where they only might get them in schools. You can't take for granted that there may not be a library or a bookstore in everybody's community, or that there may not be a $20 bill to go and buy the books that they no longer have access to because of these bannings, right? Mm-hmm. Second of all, I just think people should understand that at the end of the day, we as adults, we claim that we want our children to grow up to be better than we are. And in order to do so, they must have the information that we did not have. So to stop that information really makes us all hypocrites. And it's something that we should be thinking about.
His new book, Stunt Boy, In the Meantime, is available now. Jason Reynolds, everybody.
This has been The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube for exclusive content and more.
Hey there, it's Michael Costa from The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Ever wonder what happens behind the scenes or want to catch some extended interviews? Well, now you can. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition podcast, for full episodes, extended content, and a whole lot more. The Daily Show, Ears Edition, is available wherever you get your podcasts.